ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 8 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द लॉर्ड स्लेज द किंग ऑफ द डीमंस टेक्स्ट नंबर 48. मनवो वयम तव निदेशकारिणो दिदिचेन देव परिभूत सेतव भवता कलस उपसंहृत प्रभो करवामते किम अनुषादि किंकरान. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: all the Manus offered their prayers as follows. As your order carriers, O Lord, we, the Manus, are the lawgivers for human society. But because of the temporary supremacy of this great demon, Hiranyakashipu, our laws for maintaining Varnashram Dharma were destroyed. O Lord, now that you have killed this great demon, we are in our normal condition. Kindly order us, your eternal servants, what to do now. Purport: in many places in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord Krishna refers to the Varnashram Dharma of four Varnas and four Ashramas. He teaches people about this Varnashram Dharma so that all of human society can live peacefully by observing the principles for the four social divisions and four spiritual divisions, Varna and Ashram, and thus make advancement in spiritual knowledge. The Manus compiled the Manu Samhita. The word Samhita means Vedic knowledge, and Manu indicates that this knowledge is given by Manu. The Manus are sometimes incarnations of the Supreme Lord and sometimes empowered living entities. Formerly, many long years ago, Lord Krishna instructed the sun god. The Manus are generally sons of the sun god. Therefore, while speaking to Arjuna about the importance of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Aham Avyayam Vivasvan Manave Praha Vivasvan Manave Praha. This instruction was given to Vivasvan, the sun god, who in turn instructed his son Manu. Manu gave the law known as Manu Samhita, which is full of directions based on Varna and Ashram concerning how to live as a human being. These are very scientific ways of life, but under the rule of demons like Hiranyakashipu, human society breaks all these systems of law and order and gradually becomes lower and lower. Thus, there is no peace in the world. The conclusion is that if we want real peace and order in the human society, we must follow the principles laid down by the Manu Samhita and confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So I seek the blessings of all the senior devotees and the other devotees to speak something from Srimad Bhagavatam for my own purification and for the glorification of the Supreme Lord. So today we are reading from the 7th canto, chapter 8, in which the different demigods and after Lord Narsingdev killed Hiranyakashipu in order to glorify the Lord and in order to pacify the Lord, the different people who are assembled there, they are offering their prayers to Lord Narsingdev. Like previously we saw the residents of Nagaloka, the residents of Vidyadhar planet, and Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, they all offered their prayers to Lord Narsingdev. So in today's verse, the Manus, or the leaders of mankind, are offering their prayers to Lord Narsingdev. So just like the creation, in order to create the material world, Lord Brahma actually appointed so many people to delegate his task. Just like, for example, Suppose if we start a small base or a preaching center, if there are, say, 5 people staying there, then maybe in order to cook, maybe the residents itself, they will start cooking. But if the number of devotees increase, then you need a, maybe you may will appoint a cook. Then if you have to cook for 50 people, 100 people, then you'll need assistant cook and sabji cutters, like that. And especially when you have to cook for, say, thousands of people, so then you need to delegate the task by keeping some purchase manager and like cleanliness, and so many things are involved. So similarly, in order to create this material world, Lord Brahma had to create material bodies for all the sleeping souls who are sleeping in the body of Mahavishnu. So after creation, after creating these souls, then there are so many things involved. Like they have a material body containing different senses. So demigods have to be created, who have to be appointed to control the different senses of the material bodies. And like Gandharvas, Kinnaras, like so many different living entities who are having different material desires. So they had to be given separate bodies. And after creating the human beings, somebody has to guide the human beings in order to how to lead their life. So these Manus were created by Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma created them from his own mind. And these Manus, actually they promote the welfare activities of the universe. They are considered to be the leaders of the mankind. And Lord Brahma gave them his own human form. So here in this verse, Manus are offering prayers, and there are 14 Manus who actually come in a day of Brahma in order to lead the human beings in the right path. So we see in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which there is one particular character of Manu, sorry, the first Manu, called Swayambhu Manu's character, has been described in a great length. Like Vidura actually asked this question in the 21st chapter of the third canto. Usually, like especially when old people get together, you know, say in a family function, may not be with the devotees, one of the conversation, now the typical subject matter which they converse about is, one is about their health, another is about, is asked about like how many sons and daughters you have, and how many sons does your son have, how many grandsons, how many granddaughters, like that. So it is actually, in one sense, it's not related to Krishna, but we see here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, even two old people, they are also conversing about the family matters, the dynasties of one particular devotee, that is Swayambhu Manu. So in the third canto, Vidura is asking a question to Maitreya Rishi. In fact, Maitreya Rishi is a renunciant, and Vidura is also a renunciant. But Vidura is asking this question, Swayambhuvascha Manor Vamsha Paramasammataha Katyatan Bhagavan Yatra Maitunaine Dire Praja. He says, the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu is very esteemed. So please give me an account of this race whose progeny multiplied through sexual intercourse. So was actually Vidura interested in history of persons who merely engaged in the act of procreation? No. Vidura was especially interested in the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu, because Swayambhu Manu was a great devotee of the Lord. Because in his dynasty, many great devotees appeared, and who in turn propagated the spiritual knowledge to the citizens. So Vidura was not just interested in any ordinary person, he was interested in the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu. So especially the word used by Vidura is Paramasammataha. So Prabhupada explains that this progeny created by Swayambhu Manu was approved by the great authorities. So if a person is a devotee of Krishna, even if he performs the act of procreation in perfect Krishna consciousness, with approval of great authorities, then it becomes a subject matter by great even by great renunciants like Vidura and Maitreya Rishi. So that is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Dharmo viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshama. Krishna says that I am the act of procreation which is not contrary to the principles of religion. So we can see from this example that devotional service is actually independent of the ashram. Even a person who may be in the householder ashram, but he can be, if he is a devotee of Krishna, then he can be, his character can be as subject matter of discussion by even great renunciants. And especially this Swayambhu Manu, he married his daughter Devahuti to the great sage Kardama Muni. So after marrying his daughter, he returns to his own kingdom. So there the character Swayambhu Manu is described. So it is described that Swayambhu Manu entered his capital city called Barhishmati, which is the capital of Brahmavarta, the kingdom of Swayambhu Manu. This capital city Barhishmati is actually rich in all opulences. And Prabhupada says that Barhishmati is opulent not because of the wealth, the jewels and the different kinds of wealth. Of course, Barhishmati had contained all the different wealths, but it is opulent because when Lord Varahadev appeared, Lord Varahadev's hair fell on the capital city, Barhishmati. So because of that, because of the touch of the Supreme Lord's hair, Barhishmati became very opulent. And when Lord Varahadev's hair fell on Barhishmati, so that hair grew as evergreen Kusha grass and Kasha grass. So this Kusha grass is used in the worship of Lord Vishnu, and the Kasha grass is used as a sitting place when one performs the worship, when one performs the worship of the Lord. So then it is described, what did Swayambhu Manu do with all his opulences? So there is a great lesson for all rich people who have got great opulence from this character of Swayambhu Manu. So Swayambhu Manu used this Kusha grass and Kasha grass and all used all the different opulences which he had to worship the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada says, actually no one can achieve these four opulences of wealth, beauty, knowledge or high birth without the mercy of the Lord. So if one has these opulences, that means one has got the mercy of the Lord. And one should use these opulences to worship the Supreme Lord. To acknowledge that God has given us, so let me worship the Supreme Lord. And what is the result when one performs the worship of the Supreme Lord with these opulences? Prabhupada says that when one performs the worship of the Lord, the abode of such a person becomes almost like Vaikuntha. And it becomes free from the operation of the threefold miseries. Especially we see, like many rich people, and there are threefold miseries. Miseries arising from one's own body and mind. Miseries arising from other living entities, and miseries arising from supernatural forces. So in order to extinguish the miseries from other living entities, people keep bodyguards and lot of security guards, and they undergo so many health checkups and perfect diet, etc. But here Prabhupada says, if you actually want to become free from all miseries, one should simply worship the Supreme Lord with all one's opulences. Then one's abode will become almost like Vaikuntha. So then, having entered Barhishmati, Swayambhu Manu entered his own palace, which is actually filled with an atmosphere that eradicated the threefold miseries. So Prabhupada says in the purport, it is not that miseries actually stop when one takes to Krishna consciousness. We cannot completely stop the miseries, but Krishna consciousness is the antiseptic method to protect us from being affected by the threefold miseries. So miseries will definitely come, but when one takes to Krishna consciousness, that one will not be affected by the miseries. That's why it is said that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. So then Swayambhu Manu enjoyed life with his wives and relatives, and many great celestial musicians, and along with their wives, they actually glorified the pure reputation of Swayambhu Manu. And Swayambhu Manu, every day early in the morning, he would get up and he would listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Lord with a loving heart. So here the key to get real happiness is mentioned, that Swayambhu Manu every day in the morning, he would actually hear about the Supreme Lord. So we can see this practice even in the like in the recent kings, like in the Prabhupada says, and even the kings of Jaipur, they were all great devotees of the Lord. They established a temple within the palace, and even the ordinary citizens, they would come to the temple. And even to this day, like if you go to the Govindadev temple, even in the early morning, there would be like 500 people, thousands of people would be assembled there. So the kings would be followed the same practice of worshipping the Supreme Lord in the morning, and they would hear about the Supreme Lord, and in the evening they would have discourses about the Supreme Lord. So simply by following this practice of worshipping the deity of the Lord and by hearing about Krishna, one can actually become completely peaceful, and one can get real happiness, although one may be engaged in material enjoyment. And then Shukadeva Goswami explains, Maitri Rishi says, Nishnatam yoga mayasu munim swayambhuvam manum yad abram shayitam boga nashekur bhagavad param. He says, although Swayambhu Manu was absorbed in material enjoyment, he was not dragged to the lowest kind of life, because he was enjoying material enjoyment in perfect Krishna consciousness. So it is described that Swayambhu Manu is actually considered to be a saintly king. So why was he considered to be a saintly king? He was considered to be a saintly king because he created a perfect Krishna conscious atmosphere. By worshipping the deity of the Lord and by hearing about Krishna in the early in the morning, and also worshipping the Lord and always thinking of the Lord. Because he was perfectly engaged in Krishna consciousness, although in spite of his material enjoyment, he could make advancement in Krishna consciousness without a doubt. So this is the principle in the householder life. So one of the songs Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that when I enter my home, I see that my home is almost like, it's actually, I see Goloka Vrindavan at my home. Because all his family members were chanting about Krishna, chanting Krishna's holy names, they were engaged in worship of the Lord. So then it is described that consequently, Swayambhu Manu, although he had a very long life, and when his life came to an end, his life was not spent in vain, since he was ever engaged in hearing about the Lord and worshipping the Lord and speaking about the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada says in the purport, just like when a food is cooked, if the food is not eaten immediately, then that is immediately means if it is not eaten within 3 hours after cooking, then food becomes stale. Then it is like it is very difficult to eat the food. So similarly, material enjoyment is also like that. When the life progresses, when a person becomes old, the material enjoyment becomes stale and tasteless. Just like the food, if we eat the food after 3 hours of cooking the food. But here it is described, although he grew old, his life remained as fresh in the beginning because of his continued Krishna consciousness, because he always engaged in hearing about the Lord and worshipping the Lord. And then it is described that this Swayambhu Manu actually preached this duties of the different varnas and ashram and the request of the sages for the welfare of the different citizens. So what is this varnashram dharma? Here Prabhupada explains in the purport, Manu gave the law known as Manu Samhita, which is full of directions based on Varna and Ashram. And these are very scientific ways of life. So these Varna and Ashram, these ways of life are very scientific. In fact, Krishna describes in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam of the different characteristics of the different Varnas and Ashram. First, he describes the characteristics of the Brahmanas. He says, peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance and simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy and truthfulness are the characteristics of Brahmanas. And we will see how these characteristics are very scientific. And then he describes the characteristics of Kshatriyas. He says, dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness and devotion to Brahmanas and leadership, they are the characteristics of Kshatriyas. So Kshatriyas, they have got great power, bodily strength, determination and heroism. So especially when a person is very powerful, if the power is not guided properly, then it can actually create great havoc in the society. So although Kshatriyas are very powerful, but one of their important characteristics is they have to be devoted to the Brahmanas. And these Brahmanas are highly learned in the scriptures because of that they can guide the power of the Kshatriyas in the right direction. So in this way it is actually very scientific. So Kshatriyas, they should have the quality of leadership, but this leadership quality will be guided by the Brahmanas. Because they also have the quality of being devoted to the Brahmanas, so their power and leadership qualities will be guided by the Brahmanas. And then Krishna describes the qualities of the Vaishyas. He says, faith in the Vedic literature, dedication to charity, freedom from hypocrisy, service to Brahmanas, and perpetually desiring to accumulate more money are the characteristics of the Vaishyas. So one may say, one of the characteristics of Vaishya is one has to perpetually desire to accumulate more money. That means, one may ask it is like a greed. But here, Hridayananda Maharaj explains in the purport that if the Vaishyas only have this quality, then that is dangerous. But Vaishyas should also have the quality of being charitable. They should be dedicated to charity. Not only that, they should be freed from hypocrisy and they should have the quality of serving the Brahmanas. And all these are based on the quality of being faithful to the Vedic literature. Because they have complete faith in the Vedic literature, so they are dedicated to charity and they also serve the Brahmanas. So if they have only the quality of accumulating more money, so that is simply material greed, that will only degrade to fall down. But if they also have the quality of charity and being dedicated to the Brahmanas, then actually they will not be degraded. So Hridayananda Maharaj says that this quality of Vaishyas is not material greed, because it is purified and tempered by the superior qualities. And then Krishna describes the quality of Shudras. He says, service without duplicity to Brahmanas, cows, demigods and other worshipable personalities. This is the first quality of Shudras. And second quality is complete satisfaction with whatever income they get. So one may say that if one is just simply satisfied with whatever income they may get, then one may not get the necessities of the life. It's not a good quality, one may say like that. But then, the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, their qualities, they are supposed to be generous. So because they are generous, although the Shudra is supposed to be completely satisfied with whatever income they get, but they will not lack the necessities of life. Because the higher orders, they will be generous. And the Brahmanas are especially, they are well known for being the most merciful persons. So because of that, although Shudra have this quality, they will not lack the necessities of life. And one may say that because all these orders, that is Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras, they are supposed to be devoted to the Brahmanas. But if everyone is devoted to the Brahmanas, then the Brahmanas may get puffed up. But then Krishna describes, that is why Krishna says Brahmanas should also have the quality of self-control, austere, and they should have the quality of being devoted to the Supreme Personality of God. So if they have these qualities also, then Brahmanas will not be degraded, although the other three orders, they are worshipping the Brahmanas. So we can see that this Varnashram society is actually perfectly scientific. If the respective orders of society, if they have these qualities, then there will be complete bliss and happiness in the society. And especially, one of the most important qualities is that there should be complete cooperation between the different varnas. And what is one of the most important benefit of the cooperation between the varnas and ashram? It is actually described in the first canto, the 17th chapter, where Suta Goswami is telling the sages of Naimisharanya. He says that because Maharaj Parikshit is such a powerful king, he drove Kali practically from the surface of the earth. Because of that, you are able to perform this sacrifice for thousands of years. So it is, Prabhupada explains that Brahmanas and Sannyasis, they are supposed to enlighten the people in the spiritual advancement of life. And Kshatriyas, they are supposed to establish material peace and prosperity in the society. And in order for people to get spiritual enlightenment, first of all, they should be receptive. So how can we make the people receptive? In order to make the people receptive, the basic ground which is needed is they should at least follow these four principles of religion: austerity, cleanliness, mercifulness and truthfulness. And Kshatriyas, they actually establish these four principles of religion by which people become receptive. So when people become receptive, then Brahmanas can actually enlighten the people. So because of this, because Maharaj Parikshit was such a powerful king, the result is the sages were able to perform the sacrifice for 1,000 years. So in order for long-term preaching, there should be actually cooperation between the Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. So we can see practically also, like even in Bombay, there are so many medical colleges are there. Like when the warden is not favorable, the preaching stops in between, and then after some time, we start the preaching. So we are not able to do the preaching continuously. But especially when the devotee becomes the warden, so then preaching actually, we are able to continue the preaching without disturbance. So then this is about different varnas and about the different ashramas. So Prabhupada explains in the first canto, ashram is a place where spiritual culture is prominent. So it is, whether it is a householder life or a brahmachari life or a vanaprastha or sannyas, so wherever spiritual culture is prominent, that is considered to be an ashram. So the word ashram means the place where we can take shelter so that we can advance in Krishna consciousness. So sometimes one may come across a situation like, for example, this brahmachari ashram and grihastha ashram. So in brahmachari ashram, one does not have much independence, but one does not have the responsibility of taking care of the family. Of course, devotee has so many responsibilities in the service of Krishna, but especially one does not have the responsibility of taking care of the family. But in the grihastha ashram, one has the responsibility of taking care of the family, but one has little independence. But sometimes one may think I should have the independence of the grihastha ashram and I should have the having no responsibility of the brahmachari ashram. So this is actually a dangerous condition. So this point is explained by Prabhupada in the fifth canto, where Priyavrat Maharaj was actually preached by Swayambhu Manu and Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva to take the responsibility of ruling the whole planet Earth. Maharaj Swayambhu Manu had two sons, Uttanapada and Priyavrat Maharaj. So Uttanapada initially ruled the kingdom, and after Uttanapada disappeared, he gave the Dhruva Maharaj ruled the kingdom. But after that, actually there was nobody to rule the kingdom, but Priyavrat Maharaj was practicing devotional service under the guidance of Narada Muni. So since there was nobody to rule the planet Earth, so then Swayambhu Manu approached Priyavrat Maharaj with a request that you please take the responsibility of ruling the planet Earth. So then, still Swayambhu Manu, Priyavrat Maharaj was not convinced. Then Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, everyone told the same point. Then finally Swayambhu Manu Priyavrat Maharaj took the responsibility of ruling the planet Earth. So then it is described, Priyavrat Maharaj married Barhishmati, who is the daughter of Vishwakarma. So Prabhupada says that actually Priyavrat Maharaj was only told to take the responsibility of ruling the planet Earth. But why did he actually marry Barhishmati? So he says that living at a home, or becoming a grihastha means living with a wife and children. So although Priyavrat Maharaj took the responsibility, but he also married a wife. So then Prabhupada says that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his first wife died when he was 20 years old. But then, by the request of his mother, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu married again. Although Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that he was going to take sannyas after 4 years, that is at the age of 24 years. So he knew that he was going to take sannyas, but still he married, because living at a house means living with a wife and children. So this quality of having no responsibility, if somebody desires having no responsibility of brahmachari life, but at the same time wanting the independence of a grihastha life, that is actually a dangerous condition. So one has to take shelter of one of the ashram, either brahmachari ashram or grihastha ashram. And we also see this example in the character of Kardama Muni. It is described that when Lord Kapil Dev appeared, then Kardama Muni offered wonderful praise to Kapil Dev. And then after offering praise to Kapil Dev, at the end of his prayer, he actually asks a benediction. He expresses his desire. Kardama Muni says, my desire is that I want to completely focus on the Supreme Lord by taking to this order of sannyas. So then Kapil Dev speaks to Kardama Muni. He says, maya proktam hi lokasya pramanam satya laukike ata jani maya tubhyam yad avocham rutam muni. Kapil Dev says, whatever I speak, either directly or indirectly in the scriptures, for the benefit of the people in general, is completely authoritative. And since I have told you previously that I will appear as your son, so in order to fulfill my own promise, I have appeared as your son. In this way, like Kapil Dev is telling to Kardama Muni. So Prabhupada explains that Kardama Muni, actually his desire is to completely focus his mind on the Supreme Lord. So Kardama Muni, so Supreme Lord himself has taken birth as his own son. So why is he telling that I want to take sannyas in order to completely focus on the Supreme Lord? Because Kardama Muni wanted to honor the authoritative statements of the Supreme Lord in the Vedic literatures, that one has to follow this, the four orders of society, that brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. So he wanted to honor the Lord's instructions in the Vedic literatures. So although Lord himself appeared as his own son, Kardama Muni wanted to take sannyas and completely focus his mind on the Supreme Lord. So this is the example of Kardama Muni. So then what is the ultimate gift of Varnashram Dharma? So the ultimate gift of Varnashram Dharma is that the Sadhu Sangha, the association with devotees. So without actually association with the devotees, the gifts of Varnashram Dharma is like a hospital without a doctor. So there is no use of that hospital. Once Gaurangpur was telling in a lecture, just like Jiva Goswami, in separation from Rupa Goswami, he says that in separation from Rupa Goswami, even Vrindavan appears vacant, and even Govardhan appears like a big python, and even Radhakund appears like a mouth of a deadly tiger. So the ultimate gift of Varnashram Dharma is actually the opportunity to associate with the devotees of the Lord. And what is actually the purpose of Varnashram Dharma? The purpose of Varnashram Dharma is ultimately bring a person to the devotional service of the Lord. To ultimately elevate a person to the platform of pure devotional service. So we will just try to discuss this platform of pure devotional service. We see the topmost devotees of Lord Krishna are the gopis of Vrindavan. And we can understand the character of the gopis of Vrindavan from the example of different other devotees. For example, let us see the example of Uddhava. So Uddhava is actually already a pure devotee of the Lord. Just to consider the devotion of Uddhava, you can just imagine this situation. Although I request the devotees not to take personally. Like suppose, like we have this Vrindavan Yatra in the near future. Like suppose you see, suppose all the devotees are going for Vrindavan Yatra. And you are just imagining so many Prabhupada disciples are coming from the Vrindavan Yatra. You are already planning like what you are going to do in the Vrindavan Yatra. And you are packed your bag and you are about to go. And suddenly, the service in charge or some authority comes and says, Prabhu, I think you'll have to stay back because you'll have to, there's nobody to take care of, say, worshipping the deities or cooking for the deities. So please, actually, you should stay back and take this responsibility. So immediately, like, usually you'll be taken, any person will be taken away because we are planning something. And especially, if you have the nature of going for the yatra, then... like we will be completely taken away. And if you have to, like some people may like to stay back, but especially if you want to go for the yatra, like we'll be, even if we agree to that instruction, there will be little grudge in our heart and we may do the service. But here, in the character of Uddhava, the third canto, it is described that before, when Lord Krishna wanted to go back to the spiritual world, he actually took all the yadus back to the spiritual world. Some of the yadus were different demigods. They went to their respective abodes. And some of the yadus were directly from the spiritual world. So Lord Krishna arranged this whole pastime of annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. And he actually took all the yadus back to the spiritual world. But he told Uddhava that you should actually stay back and do this service of going to Badrikashram, and you should speak to the sages of Badrikashram about what I have spoken to you. You should speak about me because I could not give my association to the sages of Badrikashram. So you please go and give your association to him. And Uddhava, if you see the character of Uddhava, Uddhava is not a person who likes to stay back. Because right from his childhood, it is described in the third canto that when his mother would call for breakfast, Uddhava would many times would not come for breakfast because he was absorbed in the service of Krishna. So Uddhava was a liberated soul right from the beginning. And Uddhava was actually constant associate of Krishna. It is described that Bhakti Rasam Sindhu, that Rupa Goswami quotes a verse in which Uddhava says to Lord Krishna, that because I wear the flower garlands which are offered to you, and because I always wear the dresses and ornaments which are offered to you, I become free from the influence of Maya. So Uddhava was actually constant association of Krishna. He was always actually taking the Mahaprasad of the Lord. He was always taking the maha garlands, maha dresses of the Lord. So, especially this instruction for Uddhava is definitely a difficult instruction. But Prabhupada says in the purport, but Uddhava executed the order of the Lord more faithfully than going back to Godhead. So this was actually the dedication of Uddhava. So this Uddhava, he actually says that my desire is to become a blade of grass in Vrindavan so that I may become trampled by the gopis of Vrindavan. And we see the glory of gopis of Vrindavan from the character of Bhishma Dev. Like once one devotee who actually asked a senior devotee that I want to join the Brahmachari ashram. So this devotee is actually very much like a Kshatriya type devotee. Normally it's very difficult to find Kshatriyas in Kali Yuga, but this devotee, like even a slight provocation to become very angry. So this devotee told that in the history of the creation, there's only one Kshatriya has actually managed to remain as a Brahmachari, that is Bhishma Dev. After that, nobody has remained as a Brahmachari. So please, this may not be good for you. So Bhishma Dev is not only a Brahmachari, but he was a Kshatriya, and more than that, he was a pure devotee of Krishna. And when he was on his deathbed, Bhishma Dev says, let my mind be fixed upon Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Vraja. So the damsels of Vraja imitated the characteristics movements of the Lord. So Bhishma Dev first remembers the mercy shown by Lord Krishna to Arjuna in the battlefield, and then he remembers the gopis of Vrindavan who are the topmost devotees of the Lord. Because he wanted to get the blessings of the gopis before going to go to the spiritual world. So in this way we can understand the gopis of Vrindavan from the character of Bhishma Dev. And we also see this example of the glories of gopis of Vrindavan also from the first canto, when Lord Krishna was departing for Dwaraka from Hastinapur, the ladies of Hastinapur, they were offering wonderful prayers to glorify Lord Krishna. In one of the prayers, they were actually glorifying the wives of Lord Krishna at Dwaraka. So they say, oh friends, just think of these wives of Krishna, how fortunate they are. Because Lord Krishna has accepted their hands. They must have undergone so much of vows and austerities. They must have performed so many Vedic sacrifices. They must have worshipped the Supreme Lord so perfectly. Because of that, they are actually tasting the nectar from Lord Krishna's lips. And the damsels of Vraja would often faint just simply by expecting such favors. So apparently, it looks like Lord Krishna had such intimate dealings with his wives at Dwaraka. And the damsels of Vraja, they would faint just by remembering, expecting such favors which the wives of Dwaraka got from Lord Krishna. So apparently, it looks like the wives of Dwaraka are greater than the damsels of Vraja. But Burujan Prabhu says, this verse says that the damsels of Vraja are even greater than the wives of Dwaraka, because the gopis of Vrindavan, they would just faint just by thinking of how Krishna would deal with the wives of Dwaraka. So we can see there is a great lesson from this verse. So although the wives of Dwaraka, they were personal associates of Krishna, but the gopis of Vrindavan, they had association of Krishna only for a few years. But still, they were more elevated than the damsels of, than the wives of Dwaraka, because they would just faint just by expecting such favors. So similarly, a devotee may even have the personal association of a great devotee. One may have even like opportunity to hear from like many great devotees, like so many Prabhupada disciples come to Bombay. We may have the opportunity to hear from such great devotees. But on the other hand, like somebody may not have such great opportunity, he may not have association with great devotees, but he may not even have the opportunity to hear from such wonderful devotees. But he can be more elevated if he has the intense eagerness for devotional service. So that is why in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami says, the only praise for pure devotional service is Tatra Laulyam Api Mulyam Ekam. That the intense eagerness for Krishna, that is the only praise for pure devotional service. So I'll just stop here. So today we talked about, first we talked about the character of Swayambhu Manu, and then we saw that how Swayambhu Manu instructed Varnashram Dharma, and we saw Lord Krishna's instruction to Uddhava from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, and how the different Varnas and Ashramas are perfectly scientific. And we also gave two different examples of Prevarat Maharaj and Karadava Muni, and how it is important that one should be situated in one of the particular ashramas. And what is the ultimate gift of Varnashram Dharma is the association with the devotees. And the purpose of Varnashram Dharma is to come to the platform of pure devotional service. And the topmost devotees of Lord Krishna are the gopis. We saw their character from the example of, from the verdict of Uddhava, Bhishma Dev, and from the ladies of Hastinapur from the first canto. So, if anybody has any comments or corrections, I'll stop there. Vrintara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.